intimacy is a massive topic. It's one of those topics that just has so many different branches and edges and fragments and fractals, you know, like the branches of a tree. And it just sort of keeps going out and out and out. And there's so much to unpack, to look at, to analyze within ourselves, within culture. I mean, sexuality in particular is very much a natural attunement of our experience. It's part of procreation. It's part of replication. It's part of passing our genes and keeping this whole life thing moving and discovering what the next iterations of evolution, of life, of existence is, and then reconciling with what we leave behind when we do those things. Intimacy is this interesting challenge of connection and separation. It's this weaving in and out of being an individual and then being a part of a union or a collective in some form, whether that's abstractly in terms of a word or phrase like the love of humanity, which is very abstract. You've not met every human on the planet. but as you get to know yourself more intimately, you can get to know all of the darker parts of the self or all of the complexities of the self. And it all kind of interweaves into this simple love of humanity. And the challenge there, I think, is that boundaries are very much still a part of our experience, that we are an individual spending our lives as an individual, even though within us is this collective of screaming cells that is, you know, yearning to continue to replicate and evolve and to merge and connect and become something bigger than ourselves. It's very complex and simple kind of all at the same time. And there's a certain beauty to it. There's a certain surrender to it that is like, oh, it would just be so lovely just to, you know, rest into someone or something or some idea or some community. You know, it's like putting your head on a person's chest. It's release, it's ease. And there's something really beautiful about that. And at the same time, I always record this at noon. The bells are ringing. Let's let it go. that's a mistake I make pretty often. But that's okay. We're just going to let it roll. I don't even know if the microphone's picking it up, honestly. I'm going to let it ring for a second. Yeah, I don't think the microphone's even picking it up. It's going to distract me, though. So I'm going to let it sit for a moment. Because that intro was too good, and we're getting off to a good start, and I don't want to restart this. And, you know, it's really interesting to be, you know, if the bells weren't here, I probably wouldn't know what time it is. I just don't, my life has kind of become that a little bit, where I've got appointments and stuff like that, but I don't really, like, I wake up when I wake up and all of that. I'm not rich, but I just have constructed life that's the case. And so the bells are a nice reminder to, like, it's funny. I was talking about, like, the esotericness of, like, love of all humanity, and the bells were just like, welcome back to reality. and that's it. It's like, it's that idea of, like, again, like the beauty of resting your head into someone's chest and saying, like, you're taken care of, or you're carried through, or you're supported, or you feel safe. And then the bells ring and you've got to get back into life, right? And there's these beautiful ideas of enlightenment and release and full submission into something to which we'll never feel pain ever again. You know, that might be death, you know, but I don't know that there is necessarily a place where we'll never feel pain ever again. But that's part of the very real essence of existing, is that we have to have boundaries because we live and we have bills to pay and we are part of the ecosystem of life. Even if you didn't have bills and you weren't part of the quote unquote capitalist system, you know, you still have to cultivate food and find water and nurture this living system that you have as a human, as a person. So that requires taking a moment to separate from another person and say, I need to tend to my needs. I need to tend to my life, to my existence. And so that's what I mean when there's this weaving in and out of intimacy, that when there's like this unchecked fusion, you know, we call it codependency sometimes, or this boundarylessness. That sounds so appealing to just kind of say that. There's this feeling of like, ah, I'm boundless, I'm ethereal, I'm omnipresent, I'm with everyone and everything, I'm merged with my partner, I'm totally in essence with them, or with a group of people, or whatever the case may be. I think this can happen physically, intellectually, emotionally, socially, and all of that added together creates this sort of spiritual experience. And we usually, when I use the word spiritual, I mean the study of the self and this sort of alchemical alignment of our experience, this perfect attunement between ourselves and the outside world. And it does feel like the boundaries of ourselves, our skin sort of fades away from, you know, the reality that we're surrounded by, that we're just sort of connected to everything. And that's beautiful. And then again, you know, returning back into ourselves. And it's not like a shrinking away from that. It's not diluting that experience, but it's also, it's feeling it and then walking forward in a sense. It's this ability to bring in the yin and the yang energy. You know, the yang is kind of these boundaries. If we didn't have the containers of life, then we wouldn't have life. And we're needing to carry life with those boundaries, with those containers. So it's this interesting balance, I think, with this idea of intimacy. And so I think of intimacy in terms of multiple ways. It's not really just sexuality. I mean, sex is a major component, but sex is also one of those things, if treated improperly and not given the proper care, not given boundaries, maybe not given contrast, not given space. You know, it's very much like, chemically speaking, if we are constantly, you know, having sexual relations and not giving our body breathing space, then we won't have a chemical reset. And even the pleasure of it starts to dilute. You know, we're chasing the same high, but it dilutes over time. That's like the dopamine effect. That's the addiction effect. And for me, as someone who has sex addiction, self-diagnosed, but I've certainly had a porn addiction. I've had challenges with, you know, cheating in my past and not honoring boundaries. And it's all come down to boundaries, as I'm learning, that honoring these boundaries is vital and important for us to get the fullness and the breadth of these kind of merged experiences and these pleasure experiences, to really get the most out of our experience. And it's variety, it's contrast of life, it's attuning the instrument of the body to properly receive. It's like with anything, if you're overplaying an instrument and it starts to wear down, you've got to replace the strings or give it a damn break and create some breadth and depth to the experience of it by giving it also air to breathe, to give it some pauses. I know I'm not doing my best work when I'm not pausing enough. I end up talking too fast. I'm saying too much. And I get into this like kind of anxious, nervous, attached energy. And the attachment that I feel when I start doing that is that I want a specific response. I want people to like me. I want to be heard. I want to sound smart. I want to be emotionally intelligent, and I want to be loved, and I want my legacy to carry forward. And that comes out through this panic. When I let go of those things and I notice it and I'm like, okay, let me back off of that. I can give a little break in terms of the space in between. It's the thing with creativity, I think. When I see sexuality and creativity as pretty interconnected, when we're not getting into creative flow, we're not doing a bunch of projects that feel really good for us, it can be really easy to get into, again, that addiction state. You're chasing a high, you're trying to complete a list, you're trying to, maybe it becomes too analytic, and you're trying to reach some point of perfection that doesn't exist, and just burn yourself into the ground. And if you're creating, and you're having struggles with creating, maybe you get into a flow for a while, and it's so potent, and it's so powerful, in the same way that you might have, like, you know, a new intimate connection, and it's so potent, and it's so powerful, it's fresh, it's new chemicals, it's new smells, new endorphins, new feelings, new excitement, novelty, that you just want to almost burn it to the ground with the amount of energy you want to put into it. And then at some point, the energy fades and it starts to feel less potent. And you start to, you know, you start to leave the clouds and you start to land the plane and you start to come back down to reality a little bit, where you hit the end of inspiration, or you hit the end of motivation, or you hit the end of, you know, the romance phase, the puppy love phase, the beginnings excitement moment of it. And maybe you start having questions, question your creative potential. You question the intimacy and the creativity and the possibilities of this relationship. You start to see the reality of the person. You start to see the reality of yourself. Start to question, am I capable? Can I do this again? That was such a potent moment. Am I able to bring myself to do that again? And often it is like trying to return to something. It's maybe being so unconscious in the moment or so in flow, which can sometimes produce an unconsciousness, which is why it can go so fast, that We get addicted to the desire for the beauty of it, and then we want that same thing again, which kind of creates this paradox of undermining the potential for the next thing to happen, right? And that's what happens in a relationship. You start to learn how and when you need space from each other, because now you've gone through this immediate beautiful thing where you figured out how you're intertwined and merged and how you connect and what this new potential of this combined aspect of this relationship is. But then you breathe out and you're individuals again. And what does that mean? What does that look like? How do I go back to being me? And how do I cultivate my sense of self and also find a way back into the romancing and the intimacy of whatever the next kind of stage of this relationship is? The same thing with creativity. You know, what's the next thing going to be? And it's entering back into the unknown. There's something about this merging, this beautiful essence again of intimacy, where you're just like, I have it all figured out. And it's not even, again, just sex. It's a deep embrace. It's a hug from a wonderful friend. And there's this moment. It's a secondary moment where you're like, this is it. I got it. I figured it out. I feel merged. I feel lovely. I feel connected. What else is there? And you don't want to let that go. And it's that attachment to that that makes the unattachment, the uncertainty, painful. Because the longing now becomes to get back to the other thing. So the challenge then becomes loving the self and feeling connected with the self, not just in a merged intimate state, and developing intimacy with the self, and then getting more comfortable with uncertainty of when is the next bit of intimacy going to come. Again, could be sexually, but physical, intellectual, emotional, social. You know, when am I going to be in a crowd in a situation where people are cheering for me and applauding me and giving me praise? When am I again going to be in a situation where someone is lauding my intellect and learning something from me? When am I going to be in a situation where someone is going to witness me or I get to witness them? You know, it's like these constant questions can keep us from enjoying the space in between. And often when people are starting to do spiritual work, you know, study of the self kind of work, existential work, honestly. And I'm starting to want to use the word existential more than spiritual. Spiritual can start to be a little heavy-handed as a word, or start to feel like this dissociative word if misused. But existential is, I think, much more understanding of this idea of you're in the middle of the map and it's, where do I go? What's next? You know, where do I find the next merge point? You know, and it's learning how to enjoy the breath in as much as you're enjoying the breath out, right? So it's starting to not just enjoy the pleasure experiences and the intimate experiences and the accolade experiences and feeling like a mentor and feeling like you're on purpose and feeling like you're intentional and feeling like you're contributing, but it's also enjoying the moments in between where you get to just sit on the bench. Like you don't have to be in the game all the time. It's interesting to notice those moments when we are sitting and then those desires creep up. Suddenly you get horny. You're just sitting there and you're like, why am I horny all of a sudden? I'm just sitting here. There's no stimulant. Nothing happened, right? Sometimes that's a dissociative thing. Sometimes that's the mind or body conjuring this separation from self that is going to cover over the feelings of, frankly, numbness or uncomfortable stillness or death anxiety. I've been reading this book called Staring at the Sun, which is all about existential therapy and death anxiety. And when we're not in pleasure, when we're not in intimacy, when we're not feeling this spiritual high of love of humanity, it's seemingly nothing. It's numbness. It's existential dread. It's, what am I doing with my life? All those questions creep up. When am I going to feel connected to creativity again? When am I going to be inspired? When am I going to be doing something? And those are really tough feelings. Those are tough feelings that also deserve to be witnessed and to be sat with. It's those feelings that really start to get into the humanness of it all. That's real heart space stuff. That's really getting to know what a lot of people call the ego and the ego's desire, which is to live forever. And the truth is, we don't. We are not immortal. We have a temporariness. And I think more than ever, there's this manic panic that you can see on the news, on social media, even with seeking a sense of aliveness pretty much all the time, whether it's through pleasures of orgasms or constantly creating or constantly doing or busy work, that we're avoiding this death anxiety, this knowing that, oh, this isn't going to last forever. And it's that feeling of this isn't going to last forever that creates that drive to, like, well, I better do something. I better make a mark. I better find a way to have my essence last for as long as possible. But the challenge and truth of it all is that every statue crumbles and every painting gets taken off the wall or burned down or whatever. Your memory will eventually fade. And your opportunity for you to be carried forward, the name of you, or these like constructed identity senses of self, will eventually fade. And what we're searching for is this feeling that it won't. It's this feeling that, like, I will cement myself in history, and this history will last forever. Whether that's becoming a high-powered politician or having a lasting, having your name on a building or something like that. But what really lasts, what truly creates an impact on existence is this idea of rippling. It's a ripple effect. In the sense that I don't know the name of the raindrop that hits the lake, but it's added to the ocean or added to the lake. I just mixed my spaces there. But that it's releasing and letting go, in my mind, at least. It's releasing and letting go of the desire for you as a raindrop to have a name, to be carried forward into the river of existence. Again, ocean, lake, river, whatever. I'm mixing water sizes. Labeled water sizes. It's funny, when I leave spaces in podcasts, I often wonder what's going on in the person who's listening. I wonder what's happening in your brain. Wait, did something go wrong? Did it stop? Did my phone die? Spaces are wonderful. Spaces are uncomfortable. I'm learning to be at a party and to just sit there. That makes people uncomfortable because it makes me uncomfortable, and I'm learning to not be uncomfortable with it. And it's interesting. It's an interesting social experiment, but it's also just an interesting thing to do. I mean, part of me panics is like, should I be entertaining? Should I be talking to people the whole time? Should I be schmoozing? Should I be trying to make something happen? And I think another challenge right now is that at this stage of my life, particularly in the area that I'm around and like some of the people I'm around, I don't necessarily need anything from them. And I can connect with them when, like, I don't want to get in the way of what they're needing, which is someone to help their career or someone to do a project with. And I'm learning that, like, if I'm not a part of that, then I can just stay out of the way. You know, I'm not needed in that moment, and I don't need to inject that I'm needed in that moment. I'm learning to not force. I don't want to force the creativity. I don't want to force connection if it's not there and if it's not possible. Intimacy to me feels like it's the boundary part of intimacy is that it is a two-way street. You know, both people need to say yes, whether that's in a conversation or people wanting to go to a social gathering. Everyone says yes to it. And the people who say no, they don't go. Or, you know, they presumably and hopefully don't get forced to do it. Those are some of life's biggest challenges, right? Is allowing for those boundaries to exist. Weaving between those things. I ultimately was trying to find a way to get to a helpful framework when it comes to intimacy, which is really the word respect. I see respect as admiration plus boundaries. Admiration being something that you can see in the other that you appreciate. Again, this could be physical, social, intellectual, or emotional. Physical could be just like, you know, the way that they dress. I don't like to compliment people on their things they can't change, right? Like, I always think it's a little tacky to compliment someone's eyes or their legs or something like that. It's like, but if it's something they clearly put work into, you know, maybe their hair, the way they styled it, like, you know, that's really lovely. But then not making it about me. It's like, I really love your hair. I really love that dress. You know, it's like trying to make me the center of attention, even though I'm complimenting the other person. But there is something about admiration of, like, I admire and appreciate women in the female form as a general archetype. I don't say that in that sense, like, oh, I really appreciate your form. I say that to my wife. But, you know, when you're out in public, it's like, I can recognize that I have that admiration and that appreciation, but then there's the boundary. The boundary is that's not socially appropriate. That's not appropriate to the person's boundaries and what they want from a connection, right? So admiration can come in, again, it's with physical, it could be looks, it could be their it could be their skills, like performance, athleticism, something like that, singing. Emotional could be their vulnerability, their artistic creativity, the way that they express themselves, their emotional intelligence, social, not really social, but like their ability to connect and ask questions and maybe coax out emotions from people. Intellectual is just, you know, having the knowledge, works, ideas, like cleverness, the ability to, you know, collect resources, stuff like that. And then social, you know, connectedness. It's putting a party together or an event together or hosting an event or hosting a podcast or getting attention and, you know, getting eyeballs in a specific direction. You can certainly admire all sorts of people for multiple things like that. I like to recognize admiration in people for spaces that I clearly do not have the ability to do very well in. You know, I'm not particularly athletic, you know, for example. I am not necessarily a great storyteller, and I am not one of those people that can like close my eyes and build a world in my mind. All of those people they're just incredible to me, their ability to do that when they do it in a healthy way. The boundary comes in when they're not doing it in a healthy way and I need to keep that energy away from me. So admiration could manifest in any one of those ways. Boundaries is the same thing. Boundaries manifest physical, emotional, social, intellectual. And, you know, it could be simply saying, you know, it could be creating literally a boundary around your house, a fence, you know, strangers don't come in this space. And if you do, if you cross this line, first of all, I should probably say that a boundary is not just saying what your boundary is, but enforcing it, right? So if I have a fence and someone climbs over my fence and enters my house and starts eating my food, and I say like, hey, I told you not to come in here, and they keep eating and I don't do anything, that's not a boundary. A boundary is calling the police. A boundary is, you know, I don't know, if you got a rifle, you chase them out or so, you know, whatever the way that you enforce a boundary is, you know, in terms of physically getting the person out. You know, intellectual boundaries could be managing thought worms. It's what content you're taking in. What are you watching on the news or YouTube or the kinds of conversations you're having? You know, what's your logic? You know, the advice you're getting about building a business or your career. Emotional, again, is like what kind of emotional energy you're surrounded by. Is there someone that's always causing drama that doesn't have their own boundaries that you now need to set boundaries around? And then socially is like, is your friend group actually helpful to you? Are they beneficial to your life in some sort of way? And I think, again, with this love of humanity idea and sort of this idea to have this sort of, I don't know, boundarylessness and this notion of tolerance is this feeling of like, if I set a boundary, am I a bad person? Like, no, you're a person. You're a person who doesn't, because of the complexity of who you are as a human being, you're, first of all, not going to necessarily have ease with everyone, not going to get along with them, and they have their own stuff. If they are psychologically challenged, and they're having their own things, and they have their own levels of health and shadows. So if you don't have respect, you don't have admiration, and you don't have boundaries. And it's true to basically everyone. Like, there are 8 billion people in the world, and you do not know them. So you have no respect for them. That's the wrong way to put it. I apologize. You may have respect for them in the sense that you have boundaries and you may admire humanity in general. But it's almost like this neutral feeling because you've not literally met every human being on the planet. It's easy to love everyone abstractly and to have this vague notion of the love of humanity. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm not saying to not do that, because it allows us to openly approach people with an open hand and to find a way to admire them and find the proper boundaries so that you can have respect for them. So what I'm saying is that there's no charge until there's an opportunity for a charge. And what you're doing by learning boundaries and learning how to admire people is to be able to put respect into place. If you have no respect for somebody, then you have met a person and you do not admire them, and you have no boundaries with them. You're using them in some way, shape, or form. This could be an employee. This could be just like some random girl at the bar or some random dude that you're just using for pleasure and you don't intend to speak with them again, or you have no desire to get to know them. No respect. Just the idea of objectifying. And a lot of people are fighting for people to have a sense of admiration and boundaries so that there's at least respect. And so I think above all, this, beyond this idea of love of humanity, I think love of humanity is the starting point to allow for openness to then eventually have respect. And then respect is the nuanced work. Respect is person to person. Respect has its own flavor between you and the alchemical reaction with the other person. If there is admiration but no boundaries, then you can fall into the trap of limerence or envy. Limerence is this idea that it's like infatuation. It's purely chemical response. It's like, this person is also boundaryless, or like, I have this boundarylessness with this person. I just want to completely submit myself to them. I want to merge with them. They're going to solve all my problems. They're going to be wonderful. Like, they probably immediately in your mind, whether that's true or not, they immediately in your mind solve the problems of physical, social, intellectual, and emotional. You can connect with them. You can be open and vulnerable with them. They could probably be physical with them, and there would be socially desirable to like have as arm candy, for example. And at least it's theoretical in your mind, right? It's like we talked about in the beginning. It's like that rush of chemicals when you're in the new part of a relationship. And in a way, limerence is all about this fantasy. So it's the admiration part turned up to 1,000, but you don't yet know each other enough to know where the boundaries lie. And there is this certain desire within us. We do this all the time when we submit to ideals, we submit to religions, we submit to people, we have codependence. There's this desire to just submit and to merge and not be an individual. If there wasn't this desire, nobody would ever commit suicide. This desire is to just kind of not have a self and to just relinquish the self. And so I see limerence as a result of some of that kind of thing. And then envy is also admiration without boundaries. Envy is not being equal. So you can also have limerence because you see this person as like above you in some way. Or you both have this feeling that the other person is above you. And, you know, kind of create this co-limerence situation. You know, envy is a lack of equanimity. Envy is that I am superior or inferior to this person. And so it's constantly putting yourself into this bucket of like, I'm too good for them or they're too good for me. And boundaries is really admiring, noticing that there's something about them that you admire, but there's also a boundary and saying like, we're not actually in competition with each other. We're equal because we're not, I'm not comparing with them in this sense. And so envy is a whole tricky thing. You know, envy can be, have its uses for sure. And I don't want to shit on envy as something that's a completely ignorable thing. But I also think that if you're having challenges with boundaries, envy might be a product of that. And then the other way around, if you have boundaries without admiration, then you're basically a hermit or having a challenge with not allowing for intimacy to happen, right? So if you're just constantly a recluse and you don't show up and you don't talk to anybody, you don't put yourself out there, again, physically, emotionally, socially, intellectually, you don't share your ideas, you don't put yourself out there on stage, you don't talk, you don't connect with people, you don't show up to social events. Nobody knows anything about your story. You don't have any way to connect emotionally. You don't put any intention in your voice. And you don't open yourself to other people's emotional experiences either. And then you just simply don't show up physically. Or maybe you don't dress well, or you don't take care of yourself. You don't allow for compliments to come through. You know, those are ways in which you can have boundaries without admiration. And it could be admiration for yourself. And it could be just, you know, no respect through lacking admiration for, you know, who you'd want to show up for. You know, many people show up to social events because they don't want to let someone down. And if you don't care, then you don't show up. You have no respect, right? If you don't honor, you know, again, if you don't honor someone's thought process, you don't honor someone else's physical boundaries, you know, showing up stinky, you haven't showered for 4 days, there's a certain lack of a physical boundary, or even like getting too close physically to people, there's a lack of a boundary. That's excluding, you know, people who are genuinely dealing with autism and genuine challenges and stuff like that. I'm not insinuating that they lack respect by any chosen means, or that certain cultures who are way more physically intimate lack respect. But again, it's all contextual. So I guess the better way to put it is if you've got one without the other, then it's easy to lack respect. If you have limerence and you create a fantasy about a person, and you imagine yourself as being in relationship with them, even when you aren't, even if the limerence is shared and you have this challenge with each other where you're not setting a boundary and you do get into a relationship and it's this massive spiral and then burnout, there's not really a respect for that person because you're not seeing them for who they actually are. And then if you have boundaries without admiration, you have no respect in the sense that you're not, you might not have respect for yourself to allow for intimacy to occur, or you might not have respect for other people by not showing up, by not listening to what they have to say, by not witnessing them, or allowing yourself to be witnessed by going on stage and performing or sharing or sharing stories or laughing or bringing a meal, sharing a meal with somebody, or being a part of traditions, or even taking care of yourself. Taking care of yourself could be, again, a lack of respect for yourself by not hygienically taking care of yourself, but then also invading other people's senses with, you know, smelling poorly or looking raggedy and frankly being distracting for that reason. So I think respect is an incredibly important consideration to create true intimacy. And not necessarily hiding behind this idea of love of humanity, though discovering and having this love of humanity is imperative and important, I'm creating a yes and scenario here. Love of humanity is part of love of the self. It's getting to know and love every part of you, and that there are no broken parts and there are no bad parts from the internal family system sense. And then being able to take that and approaching human beings, not with the fantasy of the love of humanity, but learning to love them by getting to know them, by respecting their boundaries, by admiring who they are and what they do, but not making who they are and what they do your problem by saying, oh, I'm not that. Oh, I wish I could be that. I wish I could be them. I wish I could be with their partner. I wish I could have their life. That, again, is admiration without boundaries. Boundaries for self and boundaries for others. So I could reiterate all that, but I don't really need to. I think you get the idea. And intimacy, again, there's so much to this. There's so much to be said about intimacy and what it means, especially today, as a lot of young people are struggling with dating. They're struggling with boundaries, a lot of them, because there's a lot of pleasure seeking. There's a loss of the traditional dating structure of taking your time to get to know each other and to have patience and boundaries and respect and admiring one another without making it about us. And I guess I'll leave it to this last thing. I think there is something about the way our world has been constructed in the last 10 years through social media and the emergence of giving the average person more of a voice through comments and through posts and being able to talk at people, not with people, and to be able to see and comment and react to the ills of the world through challenges that we're experiencing as a race, as a culture, as a species, that is perpetuating this asynchronous connection. Right now, I'm saying all of this, frankly, at you. I'm not talking with you. You were listening. And then maybe you can leave a comment on dopamine.substack.com and I can respond to you and we can have this asynchronous connection. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but often there's a lot of hanging threads. You know, I've put out over 500 podcasts and I don't get a lot of comments relative to that. I get comments on YouTube and they're really lovely, but it's not on every episode. And so I don't always feel heard. I don't always feel witnessed. And then, you know, I can't necessarily always answer your questions. You might just get mad at me and storm off into your life and do something with it and pass it on to someone else. Or, you know, take any kind of love that comes from this episode and pass it on to someone else. We don't get to hug it out, you know? We don't get to share the bond of having this conversation. And so I think even though I'm doing it and perpetuating this by having a podcast and not actually having an intimate connection with you right now, it is imperative to now be aware that that idea of missing connections, that idea of having a greater voice, that idea of feeling like our opinions are valued, I think it creates this feeling of self-seriousness that's perpetuating, particularly through millennial culture. And I feel it as an elder millennial. I feel it coursing through me, this self-seriousness. And the self-seriousness that kind of starts through the hero archetype of being ordained as the savior of the planet, that we are here to, you know, we can do anything. We can save the world and all that stuff. That's not to blame boomers. That's not to blame previous generations. That's not a blame thing. But that is part of a lot of the generational programming for millennials. And with this self-seriousness comes self-destruction. Personally, that's a mantra that I use as someone who has had suicidal ideation, who has had, you know, difficulties with how much pressure I put on myself to perform, to work, to be the savior, to to be the smartest, to whatever the case may be, right? I put a lot of pressure on myself. And that self-seriousness leads to self-destruction. And with that self-seriousness also creates this feeling that like people need to come to me, right? So there may be a lack of admiration, but too many boundaries. There's like this, I've got this armor on, you know, you hear with attachment styles, you know, it's like these different forms of armor that we wear that doesn't allow for intimacy to occur, mistrust and distrust of others, you know? And what I think it's really helpful to do when we're trying to release those things, trying to get to know our parts with IFS, trying to release attachment styles and trying to release the armor and trying to get to that place of love of humanity, to have the ability to develop admiration and boundaries and respect. I think what we're ultimately needing to do is to go forward, to heal, to grow, etc., and to not fall into the trap of blame, shame, and guilt. Guilt is important, shame is important, and blame is even important at some point in early stages of our development. But if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably been working through some relationship to blame, shame, and guilt, having been blamed or been blaming, you know, generations or the government or your ex or whomever. And ultimately, if you could go back and find the source, I think every bit of blame goes back to the beginnings of humanity, right? It's just part of who we are to cause problems because we're panicked and we're trying to stay alive and we're trying to create legacies and we're trying to procreate and we're trying to merge and we're trying to avoid being human. We're trying to avoid the difficulties of fear and of stillness and of being. It's really, really hard. And then shame. You know, you may have something that you want and it's not appropriate to want that socially. And I find that shame is helpful to release by talking about it. You know, you get a therapist or make it a part of your art or some way to not have it harbor and fester inside of you, which is happening for a lot of people right now as well, especially when it comes to intimacy. A lot of young men in particular feel very shameful about their attraction to women, especially if they're not conventionally attractive as a person. You know, they don't feel worthy of connection of the types of people that they desire intimacy from. And then guilt can come from past actions, things that I've done before that, you know, turns a lot of people into a martyr and creates that envy of like, I admire you and I appreciate you and you're just wonderful and I don't deserve you and all of those kinds of things. Like, get over that shit. Blame, shame, guilt. Allow yourself to release those things. So process them in the varying ways and to move on from them. And I could probably do more episodes on how to start to release and process those, or at least the direction to go in. You know, blame is probably some IFS work. It's projections. Shame is also some IFS work. More introjections, what we're taking in from the outside world, things that we believe about ourselves. Maybe some anxiety work and some attachment work. And then guilt can be split ego states, things that your past self has done that you need to have a better relationship with, which could also be IFS work. I think IFS work is probably really good for all of these areas and things like the drama triangle and stuff like that. But I'm starting to ramble and Molly's made me some breakfast. And so I need to not let it get too cold because I don't want to disappoint her work. And, but I needed to get all of this out there. I think it's really important to, I mean, even for me, this is my form of creativity. So putting all of this out there is an important part of how I can organize these thoughts to develop intellectual intimacy, but better understand it for myself. Again, I've talked about sex addiction on this podcast before. I'm learning a lot of boundaries and I'm learning how, frankly, I've been disrespectful, you know, and learning to not just have this abstract love of humanity, but to respect as many people as I can that I come across. And it's also valid to not respect someone who is not yet, you know, doing something to their best ability or doing something to their, it's not about this goal of quote unquote being a good person and having to respect everyone. I don't think everyone has earned respect. And that's the discernment. That's what you're paying attention to. You're noticing, is there something about this person to admire? Is there something about this person that they have boundaries or that I can set boundaries around? And are both of these components in place? And if those both components are in place of admiration boundaries, then respect is there. If not, respect's not there. And I need to set boundaries or I need to examine them a little more and see if there is something about them that I can admire and appreciate. So, yeah, I think that's it. I think the channel has closed there. So, if you've gotten this far, I would appreciate you supporting and subscribing Dopamine at dopamine.substack.com, DOPEAMINE. I have changed the subscription to $5 a month. It will help me to continue to do this if you are a subscriber and supporter. This feed, Dopamine, the main podcast, is free for everybody. And there's going to be, you know, a companion article that goes with this and all of that stuff. And you'll get it directly into your inbox if you do go over to dopamine.substack.com and subscribe. And there are multiple feeds. So there are multiple newsletters. Basically, Dopamine is the publication. And then I've got multiple newsletters. So Dopamine and the podcast are kind of its own feed. Then I've got Personality Strategy, where I talk more in depth about personality types and how that can help with personal growth. Then I've got The Spiral, that's talking about personal development and human development through the lens of the stages model, generational theory, and spiral dynamics, stuff like that. Things that are happening in the world, but things that are also happening within ourselves. And The Mood, which is more like a live journal, kind of me just sharing where I'm at in my personal story. And one more that I just add. Oh, The Optimist is my latest one, which is a series of links to YouTube videos or ideas, articles, concepts of where the world is going. It's kind of my futurist section. So when you sign up at dopamine.substack.com, and you get the initial email, it's going to explain all of this. And then at the bottom of the email, you can hit unsubscribe. It'll take you to a page that has these levers, these on-off switches that you can select which ones you want to receive. And all of those other feeds, mostly those other feeds, The Optimist, The Spiral, things like that, will very likely have deep dives and things that are only going to be on the subscription-based feed, which is only $5 a month. So I would consider, if you've been a fan of mine, you've been listening to the podcast for a long time, you've gotten some value out of this, and you've been a follower on YouTube or any other places, it would really help for me to feel a sense of connectedness that I know that you've been a fan, I know that you've been a part of this, I know that you support me and my work, and that this is actually meaningful and means something, and I'm not just wasting my time with creating all of this and continuing to build all of this to provide support. And if you become a member, you can leave comments and become a part of the community in that sense and ask questions of me and directly chat with me, right? That's the kind of access and entry fee to all of it. So again, $5 a month, dopamine.substack.com. So I appreciate you. Let me know what you think about this topic of intimacy. Did you learn anything from this? Is there anything I missed? Is there a framework that has been helpful to you? A concept? I want to know. Sound off in the comments below. I appreciate you. My name is Christian Rivera, aka CNote, and I'll catch you next time on Dopamine. See ya.